the following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Consider yourself a home dreamer? One who watches the renovation programs on television? Are you just waiting for the right time to build or renovate your dream home? Welcome to Winning the Dream Home Race with Steve Cliff Architect. Steve has spent 3 decades learning how to win at the dream home game. He has insights into the psychology of space that could strengthen your marriage and soothe your soul. He has an understanding of market forces and the methodologies of construction that could save you thousands of dollars, and he could make you a winner. Now, here's Steve Clipp.
Good morning, people. Welcome back. Well, today I have a really special guest, my daughter Elizabeth.
Hi there, how's it going?
Hi, Elizabeth.
Glad
Elizabeth
to be on.
Graduated from Duke University about 2.5 years ago and got a job with the Department of Homeland Security in Washington, D.C. Moved up there, and she's now, we're going to talk about her adventure in her first home. But she's, as far as this show goes, she's so much more of an expert. She's working on her master's in real estate development at Georgetown University. She's almost finished. And she also has switched over and is now working for the world's largest real estate consulting firm. They do all of the consulting and management services for the real estate industry. And so, somewhat of an expert.
Thanks, appreciate it.
You're welcome. The whole idea, one is that when you're young, in your 20s, and you haven't started your family yet, you've got both a lot of energy and you also have a fear. I mean, you have a lack of fear. So it's possible to plunge into things that are seemingly over your head and just swim with them and go for it. One of the great things about this, about doing that in your 20s, is that you can get a jump start on the rest of your life. If during your 20s you buy something that you can afford, that somehow you can make happen, and you know, then build sweat equity in it, build equity, that gives you a basis from then for the rest of your life. That is the basis on which you can build bigger and bigger dream homes. And so, anyway, Elizabeth, how did you, I know you were still at Duke when you really wanted to have your first home. How did you start this process?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I was still at Duke. I was sort of a, I guess you'd call a real estate nerd, but I think that I think it started as a hobby, which everybody needs something that they do online and something to fill the time. And mine was cruising the real estate sites. I really enjoyed looking at homes that were for sale, and I wasn't really entirely sure why, but I think, after talking to friends, I think it's actually relatively common. People look at the real estate sites that show listings and pictures and start kind of trying to get a sense of what maybe they could afford and whether this is possible or not. you know, so I looked and I started narrowing down kind of what was important to me and what aspects I needed to have if I was actually going to potentially think about taking the plunge and buying my first place.
So you had, well, first, you have a couple of significant advantages that helped. One was that you had a small inheritance from your grandparents that allowed you to make a down payment.
Right, and that was pretty important. As a first-time lender or a first-time borrower, banks are often a little bit hesitant to give out money to someone that really has no proven track record that they'll pay back the money that they're borrowing. And, you know, it is true what they say. You know, your relationship with your banks is a big deal, but at 22, I didn't have a relationship with the bank. So having a little bit of money, a little bit of seed money was very important in letting them know that I was in it for real and my money was in there. So I was certainly going to do everything I could to pay back my loan.
And really what we're talking about is at least 30%. I mean, the bank, you know, 20%, they probably still aren't interested because you're too unproven.
Right. And a lot of it depends on
money.
Right. It depends a lot on the value of the asset you're looking at purchasing. But he's right. You know, you want to have at least be able to imagine getting 20% of the value of the home you're looking at. Whether it's through friends or family, investment, that sort of thing. In my classes, actually, we joke about it. They call it fast financing. It's how almost anyone in the business got started. It's friends and family financing. So that's the best way to go about it.
When I was your age, mm-hmm. I came out of school wanting to do the same thing and lived my first year out of school as a pauper. I mean, I lived as poorly as I did when I was in college, which is really poorly, and saved enough money my first year that I could make a 20% down payment on an inexpensive house.
Yep.
Even then, I had to get my dad to co-sign the loan and to basically, on paper, be half owner of the house in order to get a bank to, you know, to lend me the money.
Yeah, it's definitely helpful to have that support system. You know, the banks know that people who have people who are willing to help them out, and co-signing is great. Co-signing is fantastic because a lot of times, especially in the last 10 years or so, lending restrictions have really been tightened kind of in response to some of the issues that the real estate market has seen. And that makes it a little harder for new borrowers. Which means that if a lot of really great borrowers, people who would make fantastic homeowners, might be restricted from the loans that they could achieve. But being able to co-sign is a really fantastic way to go about that. You get the credentials, the stability that the bank is looking for, but you take on the responsibility yourself, and that's a great, great method.
And one of the kind of things that may reassure your co-signer is the idea that it's not forever. In my case, 3 years later, it was 2 to 3 years later, I'd already done substantial renovation on the house, so I'd increased the value of the house. And I was able then to refinance and basically get my dad off of the loan and refinance where I was on it alone. And I think in today's market, and especially with the no closing cost loans,
mm-hmm.
you can do that so that your co-signer isn't, you know, on the line forever.
Yep. Because contrary to popular belief, I think most foreclosures actually do happen in the first couple of years, and usually due to the inability to reevaluate their, you know, someone didn't really think through exactly what they were doing. But if you can hang on and have that cosign for the first couple of years, you're looking in a really great, being in a really great position.
Now, you started looking seriously as soon as you, mm-hmm. you know, confirmed your job in Washington, D.C.
Exactly.
What did you target? I mean, what did you target in D.C. to narrow your search?
Well, I think originally the most important, the overarching concept was that because I had been searching and kind of cruising these websites and walking around neighborhoods for years, by then I knew what was important to me. I knew what needed to be there in order for me to even consider a property, and that made the search a lot easier. The first thing was, absolutely number one to me, was metro station access. And, you know, for anyone who's ever lived in D.C. or any other city that relies heavily on public transportation, it is, it was sort of my value safeguard. I thought that, you know, in D.C., there's only 10 square miles. There's 10 square miles of land, and there's only, you know, a very small fraction of that can claim that they are within one or two blocks from a metro station. And they aren't building new metro stations easily, so it's sort of a safeguard. You know that land, you know, whatever is on it is going to be valuable when there's such limited access to that amenity. And I think that applies almost anywhere. If you can identify an amenity or a location that there's somewhat of a barrier to entry, you know, not everyone can just throw up a house that's next to a metro, and also is very functional for you, it's going to be your number one sticking point. So I told my realtor, I said I'm not interested in looking at anything further than a 5 or 6 minute walk from the metro. And he thought that was great. You know, he said there's such good deals outside of that. And I said, but that's just, you know, it's something I can't compromise on, because that's what makes me feel safe in my investment. I know it will retain its value.
Well, that's the thing, is you, in real estate, understanding what is actual value and what is not.
Mm-hmm.
So, as you said, a small place close to the metro has value no matter what happens.
Exactly.
The more you can find a fantastic deal on the house, but if it's in an unsafe neighborhood or a neighborhood on the way down, or no access to public transportation, your investment is insecure.
Right. And it helps if it's twofold. If it's a twofold plus, you know, it's twofold in that it helps the property retain its value, but it also adds value to your life. You know, if it's something that you value, you know, chances are other people will value it, and it will not only retain its value, but the time that you spend living there will be much more enjoyable, because you actually, you know, you stuck to your guns about what it was that was important to you.
Now, what did you feel when you were searching? I know you looked at things that were from completely move-in ready to absolute shells, disasters. What was your feeling on that?
Yeah, you know, I mean, D.C. is an interesting market because you have so many homes that were built in, you know, I mean, my current home was built in 1903. So you kind of want to, you know, when you're looking at the market, the homes that are available in the market that you're in, you know, each one's going to have its own interesting challenges. You know, I felt varied emotions. You know, sometimes there was one house that I really, really wanted. It was in my perfect neighborhood. I could literally look down from my house and into the metro station. It was the perfect location. You know, but it was as you said, it was a shell. There was not a functioning bathroom. You know, to the extent where if I moved in, I might have had to run across the street to the McDonald's or something to use the restroom. But in any case, it was a little daunting, but
that was also the one that you looked at it was a part of a duplex.
Mm-hmm.
And in talking to the neighbor, it was clear the neighbor, who was an elderly African American woman, that she wasn't moving out of there, and there was little likelihood the other side of that duplex was going to be renovated in the next 5 years.
Right.
And that's something else you look for is, you know, when you go to sell, are you sitting beside other equally renovated and upscale houses, or are you still sitting beside something that, you know, looks very low income?
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, you definitely don't want to position yourself in a situation where you'll be trying to sell. but the rest of the neighborhood is not interested or capable of moving up in the same way that you are. You know, you kind of want to be part of the flow because people don't buy a home. They buy a neighborhood and they buy an investment, both of which are quite reliant on the people around you.
Taking the risk if
exactly.
You're the first person in, if you're the 10th person in, there's probably much less risk.
Right. And as, you know, in real estate in general, it's quite valuable and quite profitable to be the first one in. However, the risk is so much greater that I think if you're really talking about young people, people in their 20s, you don't really want to be that trailblazer necessarily. You might want to be the third or fourth trailblazer. You know, when I finally settled on the home that I did purchase, you know, four doors down there was a home that was clearly had completely just been redone. And, you know, I went over and talked to those people and I saw that, you know, they thought there was potential in this neighborhood and they, you know, they were the first. And I thought, well, you know what, if they're doing it, you know, I'm not the only one, and I'm not going to be stuck in a neighborhood where no one seems to want to improve. And it was an early sign, but I think if you can get some indication that your neighborhood is somewhere that people care about and want to make a great place to live, that's helpful. You're not the only one trying to do that.
And it, you know, you also have to judge. It's not just some of the neighbors wanting to improve or moving and new people coming in who are going to fix things up. But it also can be actually any long-term residents who are homeowners and maintain their houses well
mm-hmm.
are just as valuable.
Yep, absolutely.
It's not necessarily new people coming in to fix up. The danger signs are a lot of rental housing. Almost never will rental units be as well kept or the, you know, there'll be as much attention to the, to who rents them as if it's owner occupied.
Absolutely. And that is a danger that's definitely a very important point because as young first time home buyers, you're often looking in markets that are a little lower and might have a lot of rental units. I think because of the market that we're in, a lot of great family homes are being used as rental units or rental homes, and so, you know, it's okay if there's a couple, but if you're in a market that seems dominated by rental property, that's probably not the market for you.
And on your particular street, not yours, mm-hmm. but in general, if on your particular street there is a true bad apple, you know, it can blight your investment.
Yep. I know this really wonderful couple that purchased a property, you know, probably about a mile from me. And they purchased it with the intention of fixing it up and doing everything that everyone has those great intentions for. But the woman who lived next door happened to be an avid Michael Jackson fan, which is absolutely fine. But she decided that she was going to decorate her house, I mean the exterior of her house, in Michael Jackson paraphernalia. Now, there's nothing illegal about that. You know, if you're not in a homeowners, you know, association kind of situation where someone will tell you to take that stuff down, they were stuck. And so they ended up having this beautiful renovated house literally next door to a home that was paper. You know, all the windows were papered with Michael Jackson pictures and there were Michael Jackson dolls sitting on the porch and nothing they could do about it. Now, you know, it's not necessarily a bad investment. You know, they have the property. It's not going anywhere, and maybe she will first. But it's certainly not going to help them if they tried to sell tomorrow. So,
yeah.
You know.
Okay. We're going to go to break now. But when we get back, Elizabeth, why don't you tell us about some of the fear and adventure of taking a sledgehammer to what you just bought?
Absolutely.
And when we come back from break.
Talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Very rarely does our news media spotlight some of the good things that are happening in our world. For more of these good stories and the people that are creating them, tune in to Bread for the Journey with Mariana Cacciatore. Whether these good acts stem from personal tragedy or just a desire to help out and make this a better world in which to live, you'll find inspiration in every week's program. Connect with those that are doing something great for a change. Listen for Bread for the Journey, Saturdays at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, noon Eastern, on the Voice America Variety Channel.
All round the outermost rim of the shield, he set the mighty stream of the river Oceanus, creating Achilles' shield in Homer's The Iliad, Book 18.
Rachel Carson, in The Sea Around Us, said,
"All at last, return to the sea, to Oceanus, the ocean river, like the ever-flowing stream of time, the beginning and the end."
Moyer's Environmental Dialogues with Dr. Rob Moyer offers lively dialogue and revealing narrative inquiry into how individuals are overcoming obstacles and creating a greener and blue planet Earth.
Tune in Thursdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, 12 noon Pacific on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned into Winning the Dream Home Race with your host, Steve Klipp. We'd love to hear from you about our program. Call in to 1-866-472-5788. Again, that's 1-866-472-5788. Or send an email to clipark@yahoo.com. That's C-L-I-P-P-A-R-C-H at yahoo.com. Now, back to Winning the Dream Home Race.
Okay, so now you've bought this place, and one of the things that I try to tell people is that to really look realistically at a property, and in this case, you're going to renovate everything. You're going to redo everything, so there's no value in 30-year-old plumbing fixtures or, you know, all of the improvements that have been made over the years because you were ripping them out. Ideally, you don't want to pay for that stuff. And so if you're going to completely redo a place, then you'd almost rather buy the place that's unlivable rather than the one that is marginally livable. How did it feel to walk in? Your house was actually, you could live there. It had bathrooms that worked and a kitchen that worked somewhat.
Somewhat, yep.
But then you started tearing into it.
Yeah, I, you know, when I moved in, the property that I ended up purchasing was actually, it was an old office. So I realized, you know, there was nothing really that I was going to be keeping. Everything would be brand new. And there's very little that was going to stay.
It was a row house, but it had been used as an office for years.
Exactly.
That's what you're saying.
You know, when he says kitchen, he's talking about there were two cabinets and a stove. You know, there wasn't a fridge. There wasn't, you know, nothing that I would call a kitchen today. and there was one bathroom, but it was in the wrong spot, and, you know, none of it was going to be sticking around. But the first thing I did, you know, was I think that I actually do believe that if it is possible, you would much prefer to live in your investment for at least a couple of months, you know, before you actually start digging into walls. You know, as my dad said, if you're in an unlivable property, that's obviously not an option. But then when you do start sledgehammering into walls, you have a little bit more of a sense of confidence in yourself because you know, you really thought about this. You've thought through it. You know that wall doesn't make sense there, and it's time for it to go. But it is really scary because you see this thing that you just paid more money for than anything you have ever paid, certainly in your life, for anything, and you're just tearing it apart. I remember the first thing that I tore down was there was this dividing wall right in the middle of the room, the main living room, that I knew was going to go. But when I started tearing into it, I realized that it actually had some relatively valuable electrical in it that that I probably needed to hang on to just for now, because I wasn't exactly sure I wanted to be ripping wires out. Walls are one thing. Wires are a little scarier. You know, so I realized I see my new house, and now it has a big draping wire right in the middle of the room and no wall and debris everywhere. And I just thought, oh, my gosh, what am I going to do with this? You know, in the end, it's something that's fun and enjoyable and definitely something that you want to try yourself, because you'll get a lot out of it. You'll really appreciate the fact that you tried. But you want to have a plan. Having a plan is the most important thing that gives you the confidence to dig in there, literally.
Well, you had another advantage was you had a dad who was an architect.
Yep, that is true.
And a brother who's an architect too, by the way. And you had lived all your life through construction projects.
Yep, that is true.
Yeah.
I think.
Now the other advantage you had that was really neat was the row house you bought had a basement. Has a basement.
Yep.
And it was just being used as more office space when you bought the house. But
exactly.
It was above grade on the front and actually above grade on the back. And so before you started renovating your house, you worked on this basement.
Yep.
So.
The basement was really important to me because I knew that as a, you know, it's very common in D.C. to have a basement apartment that they, you know, they call garden apartment, and it's in this, you know, I wanted to buy a property that had the space for that because I knew that the additional income stream of having a tenant essentially would be so valuable as I move through a process that's so expensive. So I decided that the first thing to do before I did anything on my part of the house, I needed to get that basement rentable. And the what that meant was there wasn't a separate door, a separate front entrance did not exist. There was a window, but no door. So if I was going to rent it.
I was telling you to go on Craigslist and find a carpenter who would take out that window out and cut the masonry wall in order to put a door in.
Exactly.
What did you do?
Well, I think that's why, you know, when you're 22, you're willing to try things that probably you shouldn't. But in the end, this one paid off. When I asked a couple of people what they were going to do to take the window out, I said, well, you know what? I can do that. So I just tried. I took a stab at it. I pulled off all the trim on the window, and then I try, you know, it was a 100-year-old window, so it was quite an effort to get it out. But I got the window out of the frame, and I realized that at the base of the window, it was just, you know, just bricks, and it wouldn't be too difficult to start kind of hammering in there, literally. So I and my boyfriend at the time, we got a sledgehammer, and we just started kind of cautiously sledgehammering bricks right out of the base of the window, trying to get the threshold down low enough that it could be considered a door. And we did just that. Fortunately, I think the structure of the house was such that it was relatively easy to create a door opening without any expensive tools, without anything that was going to be detrimental to the overall value of the house by the time we were done. And then in the end, we created a door-sized hole. And I thought, you know, man, if a lot of people out there just sort of tried something like this, they might be in a pretty good situation because, you know, if you realize halfway through that you're not capable of it, in a lot of situations, that's okay. Because then you pick up the phone and you call that guy from Craigslist. Or you call, you know, your carpenter or your contractor. But if you get halfway through and you realize, hey, I can actually do this, you know, just the same as anyone else could do it, then you've just saved yourself a lot of money.
Well, you actually plumbed the downstairs. You've replaced the bathroom and the kitchenette down there and did all that plumbing yourself. And
well, mostly. And that's exactly what I'm talking about when I say that if you try, you know, you can save some money with the kitchen plumbing. I did a lot of research online about plumbing, and I realized, you know, I kind of learned exactly how I wanted to do it. I knew there was no water line accessing the kitchen sink that I was putting in, so I needed to essentially install a supply line and a drain for the sink. And that's, you know, it's very, very simple sounding to a plumber, but to someone who's never done it, it's quite complicated. And plumbing has to be done right, because if it's not, it can cause a big mess. But after a lot of research, I got all the plumbing supplies, and I kind of cheated with these things called shark bites that, you know, you don't have to do any of that soldering or anything. You just kind of snap pipes together, and they stick, and it's fantastic. Costs a little more, but for a 22-year-old first-time homeowner, it's great stuff.
A lot cheaper than a plumber.
A lot cheaper than a plumber. So I ran all of the lines, and then I realized I got them all the way to where I wanted them to connect, to actually connect into the actual existing water supply lines. And I realized, you know, I've gotten this far. I've run the lines. I think I've got everything under control, but I am not comfortable taking out a saw and cutting into my own existing functioning pipes. So at that point, that was when I said, you know, this is not for me. So I went online and I found myself a plumber. And I said, you know, sir, I said, I've got one tiny plumbing action I need you to do, and I will pay you $80 to take the supply line that I have created and is already connected to the sink and just tap into the existing supply line, connect it, and walk away. And he said, well, you know, I mean, that'll take me 10 minutes. And I said, that's fine. You know, I'm saving myself a couple $1,000s by waiting to call you until this point. He said, yes, ma'am, you are. So in the end, he came over and he just tapped right in, and it turned out it was very easy, but it was something I wasn't comfortable with. And you know, you can, it's nice knowing that if you get to a point where you're not comfortable with something, you can find someone to help you out on that part, but it doesn't mean you shouldn't get started.
And the caveat I have to say is that don't do this with electrical. That, you know, even plumbing, if it leaks, it leaks, you get water.
Mm-hmm.
But electrical, if you do it wrong,
it
can kill yourself.
Yeah.
So, sounds great, but don't do it with water. I mean, don't do it with electricity.
That is true. He did always tell me that.
So the great thing about this basement apartment seemed like there were two really nice things.
Mm-hmm.
One is you got your hands dirty, meaning you and you got in there and you tried things. You built some walls. You did some trim work. You laid floors. You laid tile.
Mm-hmm.
You replaced sinks and toilets and things. And you got to try everything on this rental unit that got your hands dirty. Plus,
exactly.
Now you have money.
Yep, now I could turn to the market and say, you know, I've got this apartment, and, you know, a tenant moved right in, actually. I mean, D.C. has a very tight rental market, but immediately I had a tenant, and suddenly I had a little bit of extra money that really, really helped as I moved through the rest of the renovation. But, you know, my dad's right. You know, by doing the basement first, I made a lot of the mistakes that I wouldn't have wanted to make on the main house, you know, because a rental unit, people give you a little more leeway if something's not quite perfectly done. And I think that in any renovation scenario, you want to start, you know, it's very tempting to start with the thing that matters to you most. And for a lot of people, that's their kitchen. You know, that might be something that's highly visible because they see it every day, so they want to get it done. But if at all possible, if you want to be really hands-on and it's your first time doing it, start with something invisible or, you know, less visible than the kitchen, than the, you know, anything that's going to be immediately apparent that you were a newbie when you started. Most houses have that room or two that is sort of not the prominent room in the house. If you can start on the spare bedroom and try out your hand at drywall plastering and painting, then that's probably the way to go.
And actually, truthfully, when I bought my first house, the first thing I did was I gutted and redid the master bath. So if I'd done it the way you did, Elizabeth, I probably would have done a lot nicer master bath than I did. But the first one you do, you know, you're learning. You're
exactly,
and you also have very little money. And that's part of it. And I think one of the big surprises that you found, that's you know, no real surprise, is this takes a whole lot more money than what you think.
Yeah, it does. I mean, it takes a whole lot more money, and if you're tight on money, it ends up taking a whole lot more time. You know, you spend hours searching for deals on parts, and then you find that you know, anywhere that you can save money, you're probably going to pay for it in time. But as a young person, I had a lot more time than I had money. but those do go hand in hand. But it does cost a lot of money. The good thing about it, though, is that if you're in the right situation, you can kind of do things slowly, if you prefer. You know, I as I said, I lived there for a couple of months before I did anything. You know, just kind of doing some stuff in the basement and trying to get that rented. But I didn't start doing anything major until I felt pretty stable and pretty set. And actually, in my case, until I had an extra set of income from the basement, because once you get started, you sort of have to keep going. otherwise, you're wasting your money the whole way through. You want to be in a position where you can say that you have the money you need and probably definitely a little bit extra to get you through the a renovation or any project that you're going to get started with.
And you had talked about right now you're doing trim work in the house, and you go out to Lowe's and you buy a packet of the trim boards, and it's a couple $100s.
Yeah, it's amazing. I think, I think right now we're in a market where people aren't selling their homes as much. People aren't building new homes, but there's a lot of people renovating. So, you know, you get the upside and the downside of that. I think there's, in the last 10 years, the options available to people for do-it-yourself tools, materials, and advice has exploded. You know, there's a lot of options out there, but at the same time, that stuff isn't cheap. You know, in the renovation shows that I love, you know, on TV, they do kind of make it look cheap. You know, you're just buying baseboards. They can't be that expensive. But, you know, when you really get down to it, everything
is $2,000 worth of baseboards.
Yep. It's not cheap stuff. You know, I mean, on the upside, it's going in, it's not money flowing out in the same way that a car is money flowing out. It's money that, you know, you can hope you're going to get, you know, a lot of it back, and in some cases probably more than it back if you do it right. But it's expensive as can be at the time. So I think that the big key is to not start anything, especially if your money is tight, if your finances are kind of tight, not to start any project that you're not okay with having unfinished for a little while. You know, I got halfway through my kitchen. For the kitchen, I decided to do a lot of it myself. I ordered ready-to-assemble cabinetry online. And then it came in, and I assembled all the cabinetry, and I was getting ready
so
to put
even,
it in.
You even skipped IKEA.
Oh, yeah.
And went online because you found a better deal than IKEA.
Yeah, and actually, I mean, IKEA is not necessarily terrible quality, but I think that if there's some really fantastic ready-to-assemble furniture out there and cabinetry that you know, just search RTA and you'll find a couple of different really great options of high-quality, solid wood cabinetry that you just have to build yourself, which saved a lot of money but still very expensive. So by the time I finished with the cabinetry, I now have cabinetry, but cabinetry doesn't really make for a functioning kitchen until you have a countertop. And I was ready to get my countertop, but I realized, you know, that granite they all talk about, it's not cheap either. It's not cheap at all. So, and it's a big one-time lump sum investment. You know, so I had to go a couple of weeks without a countertop. And, you know, because as my dad said, I grew up in a house where there were always a lot of renovation projects going on. It wasn't that big of a deal to me. My boyfriend at the time, though, it was a big deal to him, you know. And I think those kinds of things affect people differently. So you want to go into these projects kind of knowing yourself and knowing if you're the kind of person that's going to be okay with eating takeout on the floor for a couple of weeks. And there's no shame in saying you're not one of those people. That just means you just have to be that much more on top of your finances to make sure that you're not in a situation that makes you uncomfortable.
Okay, we need to go to a break, and we'll come back. We'll talk about some of the pitfalls and things you had to deal with.
Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
Family caregivers face some tough challenges every day in caring for a partner, parent, child, sibling, friend, neighbor, or even coworker. You are there to provide the care that these people need after everyone else has gone home. Family Caregivers Unite with Dr. Gordon Atherley will provide you with a social networking experience. You'll hear from experts and others who are experiencing the same things, and together you will promote a common cause. Tune in to Family Caregivers Unite live every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific on Voice America Variety.
The latest business information is made simple with the Voice America Business Network. The professionals in the business world bring you live talk radio shows featuring an array of business topics, strategies for building wealth, sales and marketing, stock trading, investing, and business technology. Voice America Business hosts are professionals in their fields and bring to the airwaves weekly business discussions that offer up-to-date information, advice, and education. The Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business talk.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned into Winning the Dream Home Race with your host, Steve Klipp. We'd love to hear from you about our program. Call in to 1-866-472-5788. Again, that's 1-866-472-5788. Or send an email to clipark@yahoo.com. That's C-L-I-P-P-A-R-C-H at yahoo.com. Now, back to Winning the Dream Home Race.
Before the break, Elizabeth was talking about some of the pitfalls or things you have to realize when you're doing a renovation. I think that you have to evaluate your own situation and your own personality. Have to decide, you know, are you a closer? I know of someone who has gone into three of these renovation projects, three of these fixer-up houses, and never completed any of them. That's, you know, it's not total disaster, but it's pretty bad. And they ended up selling them as fixer-uppers when they were finished. Elizabeth, I think one of the advantages that you had was at the time you had a boyfriend who was very willing to work with you on this.
Yep.
And a spouse is nice too, but what's the difference between having someone to do it with and trying to do this stuff by yourself?
Well, I think the situation that you're in when you're going through this is so important. I mean, I would consider myself a strong single woman, but at the same time, I think having a support system, whether it's someone that you're dating, someone you're married to, or simply really supportive friends and family, which I was also fortunate enough to have, is a huge, huge deal. I give a lot of credit to my boyfriend at the time because I sometimes think that a lot of what I accomplished I couldn't have accomplished without him because, you know, he enabled me to kind of keep going and, you know, it's a lot more fun to do this stuff with someone else. I think sometimes we'd have a Friday night that nothing was going on and we'd say, well, you know, why don't we paint the living room? You know, we've been meaning to do that, so let's do that. You know, let's build a deck. Actually building a deck is one where you really do need another person. I will say that, that I couldn't have done without an extra hand, literally.
Another one of your early projects was mm-hmm. the deck and the fence.
Exactly.
Around the backyard.
And that, I think, was really quite fun. You know, it was really fun to do with someone else. And, I mean, all of these things are possible in any situation. There's nothing to say that I couldn't have done it by myself. But I think that you want to set yourself up for success. You want to kind of take a look at your life situation, you know, wherever you are and who your friends are and your family nearby, and think about who can help you and who will want to be a part of this process. Because it's not going to be, you know, I joked when I first bought the house, I said, well, I'll have painting parties and have all my friends over and we'll, you know, drink beer and eat pizza and paint. And it really doesn't work that way. You know, there are only a couple people that really are driven to help you succeed. And those people are your friend, your really close friends, your family, your significant other. Those are the people that you want to have around you when you're doing this kind of thing. So think of them
and
as
I
assets.
And I do think that the two things about doing it with somebody, first off, in essence, with the right person, it doesn't matter what you're doing. It's mm-hmm. that you're doing something together. And
exactly.
So painting the living room, as you said, or building a deck is really no different than going to a movie or going on a ski trip.
Yep.
It's something that adventuresome that you do together. And the other advantage to having someone to do it with is kind of this the support, or if it's just you, the impetus to finish and complete something, I don't think is nearly as great as if there's somebody you're trying to not show off to, but it's not just me.
Right. But, well, you want to make it a comfortable place for them to live too. And, you know, a roommate could do that have that exact same effect. Someone that kind of gives you the drive to finish the projects that you might otherwise have thought, well, you know, what does it matter to me if that door has casing? Well, you know, it matters to my roommate. It matters to someone, and I'm going to get it done for them.
Well, roommates are a different motivation. That it's really hard to have roommates, convince anyone else to share the house if, as you said, you don't have a countertop in the kitchen.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So you get stuff done. I mean, if you know that, you know, you're trying to work towards a situation where you can have a roommate, you know, you're trying to finish things up so that you can get that extra potential for income, then it motivates you. That's absolutely for sure. I think the biggest factor, I think, in success of one of these kinds of things and the biggest potential for a pitfall is general instability in the rest of your life. A renovation, as a lot of anyone who has studied this or done it knows, it's chaos. It's often chaos, and it's often very destabilizing to your routine, your life, and everything else that you have going on. So I really do believe that the best projects, the best situation for success occurs when you feel stable in many of the other very important areas of your life. You know, if you have a job, you want to be secure in that job. You know, you want to be in a situation where you don't have to necessarily worry every day about what's going on with your job and whether or not you're going to lose it the next day or whether it's going to, you know, really stress you out so much that you can't work on the house. If you have family nearby, your family and friend situation is stable and happy and in a good place. That's so huge. You know, because it's something that you don't have to worry about. And there's only so many things.
And your other situation.
Right. And that's quite helpful, too. You know, if you aren't going out and trying to meet someone, that's helpful to your ability to complete the project that you're starting.
That takes a lot of energy by itself.
that it does. But overall, you know, I think the biggest pitfalls that I've ever seen young people get into is where they their lives are a little more volatile than someone who might be more established and with a family. But the trade-off with that is that if you can really honestly say that you're stable in certain key factors, your friends, your family, your job, you have a lot of freedom, you have a lot of time, you have a lot of potential, and you have a lot of energy. So I think that's probably what I would say is the most important factor in success of one of these projects.
And one of the neat things is that when you're, if you do this in your 20s or when you're young and have that time and the energy and the things you talked about, is that the nest egg that you build then, the equity that you create through a lot of sweat labor, follows you for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm.
If you did that on one house and that you barely figured out how to get into and is at the bottom of the market, well, that gives you enough equity that you turn around and you can buy another house that's a move up. And each step of the way, that early just down in the grime work gives you, you know, gives you a leg up for the rest of your life.
It does. It's a triple threat. It gives you, one, the equity. You know, if you're making something that wasn't valuable into something that maybe is more valuable through your own effort, that's the number one threat. You're getting that return that you'd like to see in building your nest egg. You know, the second threat is it gives you experience. You know, there's so many things that you learn as you're going through this process, and it will, the kind of experience that will enable you to successfully navigate both the real estate market and the renovation market for the rest of your life. You know, you learn what you can do, what is possible, what's not possible, what renovations you shouldn't expect to ever accomplish, and which ones you can walk into a house and know you can accomplish. And then third, you know, it gives you credibility. You know, you start off from a point where especially lending wise, you know, you're kind of someone that's going to be able to move on to something bigger, and have that success in your back pocket. You know, you have that, you know, you've got one renovation that went well. You did it. You turned it around, and you know, whether it was a couple years later or a couple months, you succeeded. So you've got those three items that are going to follow you and help you be one step ahead of the game as you move into the next phase of your life.
And one thing you talked about was to look at this realistically. When you're going out, you're competing. You know, if you're not trying to hit a home run as an investment on this thing.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't, I'm going to go in there and flip this house and make money and go on to the next one. If you think this is my home, and first of all, you want to buy something that if circumstance says that you're in there for the next 10 years, that you're fine with that. You know, it does work as a home that you want to live in. And also, you don't have to get a perfect deal.
Right.
You know, it's not, as Elizabeth, you had said, there's a lot of really smart people out there flipping houses and looking for a great deal. You don't have to get a great deal because this is your home, and you will maximize it through sweat equity and also through the enjoyment of living there.
Exactly. I mean, I think it's so important to look for a home that has value to you, you know, not value that you see, that you believe other people might see in it, but value that you can tangibly say, I value this about this home. You know, in real estate, people always talk about exit strategies. Your exit strategy is kind of like, you know, if things don't go so well, how are you going to get out of this situation? If rates change and the housing market drops, your exit strategy is living in and enjoying the home that you've purchased. And I think that lens, that's so important, that if things don't go the way that you're anticipating, you're pleased and you're happy with what you purchased. You know, I have a lot of friends out there who say, you know, well, I just can't believe this, you know, this foreclosure. It's, you know, it's seems like such a good deal. You know, it's, my gosh, you know, I wouldn't really want to live there. But, man, can you imagine you just buy it and fix it up and then sell it? And I think, you know, there's a lot of smart people out there. If that home had that potential, you know, maybe it wouldn't be there. And you're not the only one who sees these deals. So you want to, the best way to make a deal happen is to buy something that you see value in, and others will see value in it too. You know, we're we're people just like other people, and you know, if there's a house that you believe is a great deal, but you really don't know why it's not selling, but you wouldn't really want to live there, it's not your best bet.
And the flip side of that is that making money is a poor motivator for people. That if you're just buying this thing because, oh, I buy it, I paint it, I put some work into it, and I can sell it, quite often you don't do it.
Right.
You don't complete the job. If the motivator is, this is my home, you know, this is a place where I want to live, and you will complete it because it's your house.
Absolutely.
And you want your house, you want to be proud of your house, and you want it to be complete. So that's a much better motivator than just, wow, I can make money.
Yep. I mean, it's, you know, overall, I think, you know, it's a great thing to do in your 20s. I think if you can really analyze yourself, know yourself, and know your situation, and know the situation that you're getting into, what a wonderful way to spend your 20s, and what a fantastic story for the rest of your life. You know, it doing this kind of project really enriches your life in your 20s if you go about it the right way. And I think that it has the potential to enrich your life for the rest of your life. You know, real estate
Elizabeth,
experience. Sorry, go ahead.
We're at the end of the show.
All right.
I just wanted to say that was a terrific wrap-up. I do think this is something that's going to follow you for the rest of your life. I think that you're going to build a real estate develop bigger and bigger things, but you will always remember this first one.
Yep.
You will always remember the one where you got your hands extremely dirty doing it.
And I hope they never get clean, because it's been the time of my life, so.
It is fun, yes. And thank you so much thank you for being my daughter.
Well, thanks for having me, I.
And for coming on the show.
Anytime. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks again for listening to Winning the Dream Home Race. Please join your host, Steve Klipp, again next Thursday at 5 p.m. Pacific Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. We'll help you come one step closer to building or renovating your dream home.